Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome to the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast with your host and resident wet brains, Cam and Hen, two dudes navigating the waves of wellness. Thanks for being here. This week, Cam returns to pay homage to his dog, Carlos, and Hen does the same for a friend he recently lost as well. We give insight into the evolution and stages of grief and deep dive into the incredible power addiction has over people. Please enjoy Season 2, Episode 4 of the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast. Podcast, the show that puts some pep in your step, takes some weight off your plate, and reminds you that haters gonna hate. We are your favorite sober drunks. Cam Daddy Diggity Cree is yonder. I myself am Hen Lobster, Henny Lokes, the Lobster, Lobman X. How you doing there, Cam?
Well, you know what, man? I'm gonna revert back to my old ways. I'm doing okay today, man. I'm doing okay, and you know what? I'm on a positive note. It feels good to be back. It was weird being away from the show. Anytime that we have to take some time away from the show, even if it's just 1 week, it fucks me up. But I'm stoked, man. I got my Lauren's Wish shirt because I hit up Brandon and bought one of these.
Oh.
I'm representing for Lauren's Wish right now.
Nice.
Out here in California. So I'm in a good mood. Glad to be here, bro. How are you doing?
You know what, man? Unfortunately, I am also just okay.
Yeah.
But one thing I was going to say is I don't know why when we have a guest in the waiting room, which we don't right now, but when we do, and especially since you weren't there last week, my intro was so like awkward. It's so uncomfortable for me. And I was like, when I was taking a shower before the episode, I was like trying to drill down into that. Like, what is it? And my like snap reaction to figure out what was is it's almost like I'm playing this pretend dress up game in my basement. Like I'm some fucking podcaster. And when I do it with you, it's all good. But when there's another person here, it's like, oh, watch me pretend to be a podcast. I don't know, dude. It's so weird.
Dude, I got to be honest with you because I do normally after every episode because I'm a fucking lunatic. I watched the episode back and you can see it in your demeanor, right? Like it sounded great on the airwaves, but on the video, like you're like, welcome back. And you're kind of like trepidatious about how you're doing it. That makes complete sense though, man. Like it's what we do, but I have something to say. You are a podcaster, brother. We are podcasters. So it is a part of it. I imagine that's going to get easier with time though, bro. Like, and you did a great job. I do want to say thanks to Hannah for coming on. That was a really powerful episode, bro. Like I imagine you were sitting here like, fuck, bro. Cause you know, she was laying it all down there.
I gotta be honest, man. I listened to every single episode we've ever put out as soon as we put it out. I have not re-listened to that whole episode. There is a caveat. I edit the episode, so I actually had to basically listen to the whole thing a second time. But I always play it in my truck or whatever on my headphones at work on Spotify or iTunes. I did not replay this one because hearing it live and then editing it was like enough, man. It's heavy, dude. And obviously there's a reason why we wanted to do that, why I wanted to do that. And I hope it showed through. You know, the message is simply that if you're feeling that kind of way at all, just know that there's light at the end of the tunnel and we are here for you and there are people who care, and please don't take your life if that's what you're thinking about. There's help, there's resources, and like I said, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
I honestly can't blame you, man. I used to be able to tolerate that type of shit where I could listen to a whole bunch of, like, I think we've talked about this, this on this podcast before, where I used to be able to listen to a whole bunch of, like, murder podcasts and things like that. And then all of a sudden, man, like we talked about, I'm fucking depressed, bro. Like, I'm walking around here like, man, I am sad, or I'm anxious as hell. Like, I'm waiting for someone to come around the corner and stab my fucking anus or something, dude. Like, you know, it's just crazy shit. So I get why you wouldn't want to listen to it again, but it was a great episode. If you haven't listened to it, go back, get some insight on how our interactions with people really do carry a lot of fucking weight. And I think that's something that really needs to be highlighted from that episode.
And she said that her abuser would do what he did and then give her this, like, ham as a treat.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
A little ham treat, some bologna, right? It was bologna, wasn't it?
Whatever, yeah. Like, Kristen came home from work. She's like, I haven't finished it yet, but what the fuck? Yeah. You didn't tell me, like, it was that intense. And I was like, well, when I came up from recording, she was asleep on the couch. So I'm like, we didn't really, like, get to talk about it. You were, like, half asleep. I just woke you up and we went to bed, you know. But, yeah man.
It was a great episode, man. And there's some sick motherfuckers in this world. And you know, that was proof of it. It pissed me off a lot, actually, if I'm being completely fucking honest.
Yeah. Oh, but, you know, like I said, there's what are we going to do about it? And how are we going to play our part? And, you know, it's funny, we were just talking about it before we started recording about parenting stuff, because we're both parenting some toddlers, or a little older than toddlers, and having some issues. And we're talking about basically what I mentioned in the last episode, is like, be a good parent and lay down the law so your kid's not a little fucking asshole that mistreats other kids.
Straight up, dude. Or just their general human, other humans that they have to interact with. I think Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life actually really hammered that home on how important parenting is. He talked about how the effects of it actually reverberate. You want to raise a human that other people want to be around, because that has lifelong implications. If you're going to raise this whining, crying, annoying, non-listening little bitch of a fucking kid, that person, that kid is going to grow up into that exact person. And society just wants no part of that. As much as the internet might try to fool you that they do, society wants no part of it. Everybody hates that shit. So, yeah, holding down the long dick of the law on your kids is the least that we can do to try to ensure that they're not, you know, set up to fail. But anyways, I think that's long enough into this intro, bro.
Well, before we move out of that, I have to say one other thing, which is, I remember there was a thing a while back about, like, coaches in sports and, oh, and he was tough on my kid and my kid didn't get to play. And I... Lyndon's up there yelling at her. Yeah. Oh, they're up there going at it. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, guess what? Sports is a simulation of real life. You aren't the best employee at your company, and you don't get the same treatment as other people, and you might not always be the number. And when you fuck up, your boss is going to tell you about it. Maybe you want to grow up to not have a boss, whatever, but it's this simulation of real, like, life isn't easy. I mean, it's really super cliche to say, but it's fucking true. You want to shelter your kid and never have anyone tell them they did a bad job, or never, like, you know, say anything that could hurt their feelings. Fuck that. The world's going to deep dick them with no lube for the rest of their fucking life. This is preparation.
Yeah, dude. And now you got me on a fucking tangent. It's super true though, dude, because you're actually setting them up to fucking fail, dude, because they're going to grow up in this crazy, you know, safety net. And then when you set them out into the world, they're going to get fed to the fucking wolves, bro, because people don't give a shit about you and your, that, the fact that, you know, you always got the first place trophy for being a fucking little bitch. Like, sorry, excuse my language. I know that's a little brash, but we can't have that with our kids, man. We just can't. And I'm sitting here, for all our non-video viewers, I got Henry over here. He's got one headphone on and he's listening. I can see his dad rage coming in. But yeah, man, we just can't have that with our kids. So I'm glad that you and I are on the united front, at least parenting our kids to not be what society is lately. I'm proud of you.
Everybody did a great job. And you know what? It doesn't matter if we win or not. And the fact that you were texting and the fly ball flew over your head is not a big deal. Okay. Let's just, you know, we'll try and be mediocre again next game and make sure to give everyone participation trophies when it's over.
We'll make sure to be mediocre for the next game. Yep. That's it, dude. The static quo.
Let's be mediocre as long as everybody's smiling.
That's right, dude. That's right. Setting everybody
up. You think Tiger Woods' fucking dad ever said that shit?
No, dude. No. Nah. All right, let's get into it. So as Hen shared with everybody at the intro of last week, the reason I was out, I had to put down my longtime dog, Carlos, down. And I just wanted to share a little homage to what was and who was one of my greatest friends and companions.
Tell us about it, son.
Yeah, a little backstory on Carlos. So if you don't care about dogs, quit listening to this podcast because you're the scum of the fucking earth. And second off, here's a story about Carlos. I mean, for real, though, dude. You're a fucking serial killer? Get out of here, dude. People don't like dogs. Honestly,
he's not wrong.
Yeah. So Carlos, I knew him from the moment he was a puppy. My Uncle Joe and his husband Paul got him when he was a tiny little puppy. He was a teacup chihuahua. So when I'd go around, I would see him over there. He was fucking adorable. He was awesome.
He was a teacup.
Teacup.
Oh, little baby.
Little dude. So I would see him around. I'd bring Jack around with him. They'd play with each other. They'd have a good time, yada, yada, yada. Quick little fun fact about Carlos is when they lived in Folsom, I think he was around 6 years old, he got hit by a fucking car.
Mm.
And so one of his legs in the back, it must have just caught his leg. I don't know the full story, but it must have just caught his leg and it completely fucking like obliterated it. But he ended up surviving. And he used that little leg as like a kickstand, man. So his entire life, he hopped around like a fucking kind of like a little chihuahua bunny rabbit.
Three-legged.
With three legs. The little leg dangled like a limp dick like this. and he used it, though, when he tried to pee on
when things. He sat down, like, yeah, kicked out.
Yeah, it would kick out, dude. It had no functionality at all, dude. It just he used it for certain things, and it was awesome. Anyway, here's how I ended up getting Carlos. So one day my mom calls me and goes, "Hey, Joe and Paul are looking to get rid of Carlos. Would you like to take him?" And I go, "Well, why the hell would you want to get rid of Carlos? He weighs 5 pounds. What the hell's going on?" And so, long story short, they just don't have the time for him. So I said, "Yeah, I'll take Carlos." Now, mind you, this is active addiction, Cameron. So I'm fucking drunk. I drive over to pick up Carlos. They couldn't hand him to me quick enough. And I get him, I put him in the car, and he comes with me. Let's fast forward some time. The reason Carlos was so important to me is because when Jack died tragically, he was there for me.
Jack being your...
My other chihuahua that I had.
Chihuahua.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had Jack, and Jack died tragically while I was on a trip in Monterey with my future wife at the time, my girlfriend at the time. When I got back, I was so distraught, and I was 6 months sober at the time, right? And I didn't pick up when I got Jack's news, right? I didn't drink. I wanted to, and I didn't. And what happened organically was Carlos took the place of Jack, and he came and he knew, and he was with me every day since then, right? And he just showed this incredible companionship that you don't get anywhere else, man. And I had a hard time because Jack used to always sleep in my arms. And then when Jack died, I couldn't sleep. And then Carlos organically came up and started sleeping in my fucking arms, man. Mm-hmm. And so I've had like 18, 19 years of a little chihuahua sleeping in my fucking arms, right? Long story short, man, great dog, Always excited to see me. Hopped around on his little legs every time I came around. Always cuddled. Had the funniest little bark. He weighed 5 fucking pounds, man. When he lost all his teeth, he had his 3 legs and his little tongue sticking out of his fucking mouth. You know, his little bug eyes everywhere. Was just a real, he was a Picasso piece. But you couldn't stop him. If you saw other dogs, you wanted to kill other dogs. He thought he was the fucking greatest thing since sliced bread. And to me, he was. Long story short, I've said that 6 times, but over the last year, he started really kind of like digressing, where I noticed that his little back leg that he had used his whole life to kind of keep him up, he was now just sitting straight on his ass. And usually he would stand, but he'd be sitting real kind of like straight up. And I'm like, that's weird. And then Sunday night, he just started throwing up. And I was like, okay, he must have just gotten sick, right? And the next day, he starts shitting on himself, still throwing up. And now he can barely stand. And this just progressively got worse the whole day. I tried getting him to drink. I tried getting him to eat. He just was fading fast. And then the next day, progressively worse. I had to get diapers for him to try to help him so he wasn't shitting on my bed. And when we woke up Wednesday morning, he was just whining in pain and couldn't barely lift his head up. And I've never had to euthanize a dog. And so Ash called the vet, and they said they could get us in at 4:30. And we ended up taking him there. I held him. I kissed him. I cried my ass off. And I had to say goodbye to a great, great friend of 12 plus years. And it fucking hurts, man. It hurts really fucking bad. I look around, I'm still looking for him. And if you want to talk about things that are unmanly, I'm so used to having those fucking little dogs laying next to me. I have one of my daughter's fucking teddy bears on my bedside that I have to put in my arm just so I can sleep right now. Just so I can sleep right now. And it's just so tough. But I just wanted to pay respects to him because he was a great fucking dog, and I will never forget him. And I am chairman and CEO and founder of, if you think you don't like Chihuahuas, go get yourself one and come talk to me about it 18 years later when they pass away and you're crying yourself to fucking sleep. So rest in peace, Carlos. You are a fucking legend, and I miss you tremendously, brother.
For Carlos.
Carlos, dude.
Ooh. That was a lovely tribute.
That was a little long-winded, bro, but you know what? He deserved it. And there's a great song by Chris Stapleton called Maggie's Song, where he sings about his dog that he had to put down. And he goes, there's a part in there where he goes, I can tell you right now that a dog has a soul. And I sat there and listened to that and fucking cried, and I believe it, man. He was a great dog, and I'll
buddy, you've been playing that shit 7 times a day. Don't lie,
dude. I'll tell you what, man. I had to cut it off, man, because I can't be crying around here 24/7. I had to get back to work and shit.
This next segment is brought to you by dudes who talk about feelings and ride for Chihuahuas.
Ride for Chihuahuas, dude.
Dude, they are the shit. And I'll tell you, I hated them too, because they're the kind, they're little fucking yappers. Uh-huh. But they're not all yappers. It sounds like he might have been to other people. But if the Chihuahua is your dog, dude, if it's your dog, dude.
I'm telling you, bro, it's true.
It's not gay because it's your dog. But if the Chihuahua, dude, Mia never is not touching me or Kristen when we're in the house. It was always me. And like, dude, I'll get sentimental. When I went through my last breakup, Mia was all I had, bro. I was alone in my house. And that fucking dog, she's like touching. And when I sleep, crawls under the covers and lays and pushes up against my belly. And she also likes to be squished. She has a thing about like being in tight spaces. So like if you're laying on the couch, she'll like crawl up behind and like she wiggles her butt to like slide into being squished behind your back. And dude, it's the greatest.
Dude, it really is, man. And I think that's so fucking funny when it's your dog, dude. It's so true though, man. And there's a reason behind
Little Riders.
Yeah, dude, they are. They're on like the top 10 list for companion dogs. People don't like to think about that, but they are ride or fucking die companions, man. They really are. And when they're your fucking dog, you are all that they see, bro. And they will get you through those hard times. Like I said, man, when Ash left and shit, Jack and Carlos were there together. You know what I mean? When Carlos died, Carlos was there. He was fucking with me, man. Like, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. So yeah, if you're a Chihuahua hater, dude, you can come fucking talk to us. Cause I'll sit there and I'll evangelize to you, dude. Go get yourself one.
You can catch these fucking Chihuahua loving hands, kiss, brother.
Dude, right in the kisser, bro, dude. Straight up.
Well, if you thought that the mood was going to improve from last week, we're sorry to say it's not. But here's the good news. It's about to get worse. So I got an unfortunate text today from my buddy Kyle's sister. And Kyle, we've talked about him on here before. I don't know if I use his name or not. We'll leave his last name out. But he's my buddy from Detroit. I actually met him at Elevate, the place where I met Dallas and Jeremy Miller. And he's one of those people, you know, if you've ever been to rehab where you get like a really good buddy and you guys are just real close and you kind of just keep in touch over the years. And he and I kept in touch, and he would reach out every 6 months, year, 2 years, and be like, you know, sometimes he'd be doing really good and sometimes he would not be doing so good. And since I've been out here, which was a couple years after I finished that program, I've been telling him, dude, you should come out here. You should come out here. You should come out here. And we talked about it. There was even one time when he was driving out here and having me send him money the whole time and for gas, which wasn't for gas. And I think he actually got all the way out here and was scared or whatever else and turned around. But I guess I'll get to the point and then I'll get to the rest. I got a text from his sister today saying that he had passed away last night. And it's a really fucked up thing, man. It's a really weird thing because there's part of me, because this has happened so many times since I've been here, dude. Like, probably 15 or 20 people that, like, I was close with, friends with, knew, hung out with, that have passed since I've been here. And I hate to say that you get, like, a little callous to it, but it's true. That's one side. Then the other side is it randomly punches you in the dick and you just start fucking crying because you remember that he was somebody's brother and he was somebody's son and he was somebody's uncle. And this is fresh. It's just happened today. So I don't even know where I'm at with it. I haven't fully processed it, but long story short, I got him some help out here. I got him into some programs and stuff. And he was troubled, man. He was troubled. His life, his circumstances growing up and all that, were not optimal, I would say for sure. And he just had a hard time. He had a hard time getting into the recovery. And I definitely, you know, presented him with the opportunities and helped him as much as I could. I talked to a lot of people today, man. I really used my support group and reached out to people, and everybody said, hey, man, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And I know that. There's no part of me that thinks it is. But what happened was he relapsed out here, and he got sent to another treatment like in Southern West Virginia. And, you know, my little guilt part is like I didn't keep up with him as much as I wish I would have when he got down there. I don't really want to go down this road that I'm going on. Point being, we lost a friend today. We lost another person to this battle, this disease of addiction. And let that be a reminder to everybody, man. This is not a fucking game. This is not a joke. And people aren't joking or being hyperbolic when they say you could use once and die. Because you really, really can. I mean, they're putting fentanyl in fucking everything now. And, you know, this is a life or death thing that we're talking about. And it sucks, man. It really fucking sucks.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, man. That's first and foremost, let me just say I'm sorry for your loss. You and everybody out there in that area have been almost plagued with that type of shit lately, right? Like you said, like I think the greatest description you said was being callous to it, because the question I was going to ask you was, are you almost numb to it at this point, right? Like, it's like, hey, this isn't even shocking news. When people go out, especially opiate users, meth users, or anybody, because like you said, fentanyl is everywhere. I just got news, you know, someone said, like I talked to you, somebody that we grew up with out here in Fair Oaks is dead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Same deal. And it's just so goddamn tragic when people like us don't get it. And so you can have these feelings like you're kind of experiencing right now, where it's, hey, did I do enough? Was there one other thing that I could have done? And I had this conversation with my mother just recently, when she was talking about some of her siblings who were still kind of in active addiction and some of them who hadn't gotten it. I said, these are all conscious decisions. Sometimes we like to think that they're not. You know, when I was so fucked off, I don't know if I was consciously, you know, going out and getting drunk, but I wasn't ready, right? And I was actively still doing what I always wanted to do, whether that was running away from everything, wanting to escape in some fashion that equaled me just blotting it out. And whatever is tormenting us, you know, when we're in active addiction, the only option for us is to go use. And in this day and age, that is a fucking Russian roulette game with not just one bullet in the chamber. There's five in that motherfucker. And it could be, the odds are stacked against you tremendously. And this kind of brings me to another point that I wanted to kind of highlight here in this episode, is these layers of grief that we feel, right? Like right now I can see it on your face, that is still kind of like this disbelief, right? There's this initial shock of grief, right? Because I was just re-experiencing it. Okay, hey, he's gone now. Okay, well, hey, I got to somehow learn how to process this. I got to kind of take it. And that doesn't happen overnight.
Well, and in this scenario too, where I learned over text, I haven't talked to a human that can even confirm this. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of my brain that's like, she's just messing with you, which obviously, you know, a sister wouldn't fucking joke about that. But once trying to give it these outs that it didn't actually happen and it's not real, and someone's going to be like, no, he's fine, we just thought something and he's okay. Or I guess that's denial. Is that one of those?
That is, that is. And it's the denial of reality. Right. And it's not like you're doing it naturally or we do it naturally. It's just, it's something that we desperately don't want to happen, and it's happened. And then it brings this other swell of emotions. I noticed when I lost Carlos just recently, man, how grief comes with everything. And it's all the undesirable emotions that we fucking hate, that we absolutely hate. I was anxious. I was depressed. I was angry. I was irritable. I was sad. I was everything under the sun, right? Like, and it was all these terrible emotions that for people like Hen and I and everybody in the addiction community can take you the fuck out. And here's another public service warning for someone just like me, right? Hey, I'll be completely honest with everybody, right? No matter how long you have, no matter what, the old devil gipper definitely came for me when I had to put Carlos down. It was a short little stint. I brushed it off because Carlos was there when fucking Jack died, and I stayed sober with him, and I brushed it off, but it came, and he came. He came. I was right next to I was at the Fair Oaks Animal Hospital right there in Old Fair Oaks. One of the liquor stores I used to frequent was fucking less than 25 feet away from me. You know where I'm talking about. It's like right around that old winding way when you come around that corner. It's like right there on the right-hand side. Anyways, like I'm saying, people can use this grief as a reason to use, you know what I mean? Hey, this pain is insurmountable. I there's no way I can handle it. And that's not true. That's not true because ready, it's been over a week since I put Los down and I'm getting better each day, but I had to sit through those painful emotions. And when they come, I breathe them in and I breathe them out. Now everybody has their own way of processing these types of difficult emotions. And it takes as much time as it needs to take. We can't force, you know, healing upon ourselves, right? I didn't turn into this version of myself over fucking night. 6 years ago, if somebody would have died, it was an excuse for me to drink because I didn't want to feel this fucking way. Now I have new ways of handling it, and that's called sitting in that uncomfortability and accepting it for what it is. And so I hope that you can find a way to deal with those hard emotions, because a dog and a human are two different things, but it's still the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the memories of being with this person, Hen. And you also have something that you can always put your hat on, that, hey, when other people were looking away, because I imagine he probably burned a whole bunch of fucking bridges, you fucking tried. You fucking tried, right? You did. You got him out here. You made phone calls. You gave him cash that you knew wasn't going towards gas. You did all the things that you could do to try to help him. And unfortunately, as we know, it's a small percentage of us that make it to this fucking point that we're at. And this is a lifelong journey. So who knows where I'm at in the future. But I'm now rambling. But does that make sense to you, man? There's a lot of layers to it, and it's a fucking journey, this grief thing, and I hate it. I fucking hate grief. I hate it. Going through this with Los, I learned I hate it.
You know, I want to touch back on like the being callous thing, because I'm sure that sounds kind of crazy and kind of heartless to people, but I thought about it as you were talking, and I tried to think of a good analogy. And it's like someone saying, hey, man, got bad news. I went to the grocery store last night and I picked up some groceries. Hey, man, I was watching baseball and they hit a home run. Yeah. That's what the fuck happens when you're a heroin addict or an opiate addict. There is a high probability that you can die. You know, it doesn't mean that obviously we don't care about these people, we're not hurt by it, but that's the fucking game we're playing.
Yeah.
Like, that is the reality of this game. I mean, I don't really want to call it that. That's what it is, man. It's like you said, it's fucking Russian roulette. And when it happens, it's like, dude, I have another friend who's in the hospital right now. And ask me if I'm surprised.
Are you surprised?
I'm not. Because I knew what the fuck he was doing. And I tried to talk to him about it. And I tried to talk to his boss about it. And I don't know, he's fine. And it's like, dude, this stuff, like, you can see it from a mile away. After you've been around for a little while, you see these signs and you see what's going on. And there's jails, institutions, and death. That's it. That's the only way it goes, man. That is the fucking way it goes. And that's the reality of this shit. And just to lighten the mood a bit, I reached out to my support group like I should.
Good job.
You know, the Devil Gipper did indeed, you know, have a quick whisper, but I was like, nah, it's not. Because, you know, old Randall Brown would say, there's nothing drinks or drugs can't make worse. Yeah. But I called one of my buddies, Russ, and he said, you know, don't blame yourself. And he said, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, which I knew. And then he said, what are you going to do? Put his head underwater and suck his ass?
And now that is a West Virginia fucking quote if I've ever heard one, dude.
It's fantastic, dude. It gave me a good laugh, but you know, it's so true too. Like that visual, it's a hilarious joke, but it's like, come on, yeah, you know, like
yeah.
There's only so much you can do. And you know, that's the part that sucks when family members and stuff ask is like, you can give them love. You can help them try to get to treatment, all that. You can whatever, but they have to make the decision, man. And if they don't, there's just not a fucking lot you can do about it. And it's heartbreaking. It's heart wrenching and it sucks. And that's why we talk about powerlessness, man. We are powerless over the actions of other human beings. We only have power over our own actions. And that's fucking hard to come to terms with.
It really is. And I think another point I kind of wanted to make, or a question I kind of wanted to propose to you, because I know I felt this way. When you were running and gunning, didn't you have this overwhelming sense of immortality? Like none of this bad shit was going to happen to me, right? Like no, hey, that happened to Jimbo. Like I'm different somehow. Dude, or was that a camera?
You know how many times we drank and drove?
That's what I'm saying, dude. Like
I was drunk driving down the freeway to the Bay Area mm-hmm. with thousands of pounds of rails and ladders on my truck and a 6,000 fucking pound trailer full of copper mm-hmm. and screws and metal behind me drunk on the fucking highway. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, that is.
And that's the reason I bring that up is because I think that sort of human condition or that train of thinking that is kind of prevalent. Everybody I've asked who's been,
I think it's also a younger people thing.
It is.
I don't think I would think that way now.
No.
Now that I've experienced so much death and, you know, had so much go on, I don't think I would just be la-di-da, it won't happen to me, because now I'm on in the intrusive thought side, like that shit's definitely going to happen to me.
Little do you know, those distressing intrusive thoughts that we tell you to not pay attention to, they do kind of help every now and then. I think if we were still in active addiction, we'd still kind of feel that way because you almost just don't care, right? And the reason I guess I'm trying to solve this riddle as to why people choose to go back out and to risk that, right, is I think we still all kind of think that type of thing isn't going to happen to me. And this is a prime example of it can happen to anybody at any time. And it's just fucking really sad. And I'm sorry for your loss and condolences to your friend's family, because I can only imagine the pain that they're going through, right? I mean, just imagine the amount of time and effort that you put in to help him. How much time and effort did they put in? And lo and behold, look at the end result, right? So thoughts and prayers to them for sure.
I want to say something though. You said that they make this choice to go back out, and you're right. It is a choice. I mean, that's a fact. So we'll leave that where it is. But I want to put this caveat that this thing, this, people don't like to call it a disease. I don't give a fuck what you call it. This disease of addiction, it's so fucking powerful. And there are countless examples of how powerful this thing is. And it's so hard for people to understand. You know, we use the analogy, if a regular person said, doctor said, you can't eat chocolate cake or you die, they'd stop eating chocolate cake. But it's like, man, I just want to pound home to people who think their loved one is just saying fuck them or just doesn't care. This thing is so powerful, man. I have a friend right now who's downtown living under the bridge, and he's got about 10 people he could call, myself included, and say, I'm done, dude. I want to go to treatment. That will come fucking pick him up. The guy I used to work for, Dylan, he left work early one day. You want to go right now? All right, fuck whatever I'm doing. Went and took him. The motherfucker got a ride back 3 days later. Anyway, point being, he had a nice house. He was making good money. He had a truck. He got his license back. He was doing awesome. And he has a bunch of friends 2 minutes away from him that will take him to treatment right now, right fucking now. And he's choosing to live under a bridge. And like, if that doesn't tell you, and I can't wrap my head around it, because I feel like having a relapse, I get. Obviously, I've been there. I get that. Mistakes are made. People slip. I fucking get it. But having a relapse, after you've known this good life, having a relapse and choosing to stay there, choosing to live under a bridge, even though you know one call and you got a warm bed and a hot meal and some help from a doctor and some medicine to make you feel better, and like, and choosing not to take that. Kristen and I watched this documentary about her friend who passed away, who also died from this addiction. They were documenting her life. They were actually documenting her success because she was in recovery, but it turned into a tragedy, unfortunately, as these things do. And there was this one scene where her mom was driving around looking for her. She finally found her in a fucking parking lot, whatever. It was hot outside. She's sweating her ass off. She had everything she owned on her back. And her mom said, you want to go, honey? I can take you right now. Her boyfriend comes up. Her boyfriend is abusive, clearly an asshole. He's like, hurry the fuck up. You coming with me or not? And instead of going with her mom, who had a nice car with AC and food and whatever she wanted, to treatment to get back to this beautiful life that she knew and loved, including her like 3-year-old baby daughter, she chose to follow the asshole who was cussing her out with all his belongings on his back to stay on the fucking street. And I just turned to Kristen and I said, this thing is so fucking powerful, man. Yeah. It makes me want to cry. Yeah. It's so powerful. And I don't think people who haven't experienced addiction understand, like, this is not just like, yeah, you know, it feels good. I like feeling good. You know, it's so fucking powerful, man. And I cannot explain it. But God, it's fucking claws in people like you just can't even comprehend, man.
I agree 110%, man. I agree 110%. And once again, man, thanks for being so vulnerable on this podcast. I think that's one of the great things about this show, is our willingness to have these hard conversations. And you highlighted something very important. And we talk about this from time to time, and I did earlier in this episode. You want to talk about how powerful it is. It still comes for me almost weekly and daily, right? Like it just comes. And I luckily, I can sit and look around and go, yeah, we're not doing that, right? But the people that you're talking about who are actively choosing to do that have what I said, made the choice, though. They made the choice because they know the other side, and you're actively choosing that. And it's crazy to understand because it goes against all logic and common sense, right? Like, how could you taste the sweet life, the freedom, all the fruits of all your hard labor of getting sober, and want to go back to that? And it doesn't make any sense. And for people who aren't in active addiction, it never will make sense to you. And like Henry just said, it doesn't make sense to us. it doesn't make sense to us. People with a little bit of fucking time.
That's the thing. I am an alcoholic.
Yeah.
My buddy who's living downtown right now, I'm like, I get it, but I don't fucking get it, man.
Yeah, dude. Like there's a thing. Like, you see people who have a slip and then they come back, right? And they go, okay, hey, yeah, fuck that. It was a nightmare, bro. Like, I can't go back to that. But the people who actively go back, and I mean really go back, like the people you're describing, it just it's mind-boggling.
Let me just tell you, it's not gotten better. He's not doing hot. Like, no. He's not out there thriving. And I'm not just guessing. I went and visited him not too long ago. He's not doing well. But he's, like, chosen.
Yeah, it's sad as shit, dude. It really is sad because you actively have made that decision to throw all that stuff away, to go back to that life. And for people like you and people like me, we can continue to throw those lifelines out and hope that they wake up. And hope that eventually they have that secondary spiritual awakening that we talk about in the program, right? Like, hopefully one day, coming sooner rather than later, your buddy down there underneath the bridge will wake up and go, this is fucking stupid. What am I doing? And he might come around. Or he may not. And that is, unfortunately, his choice. And it makes that pill pretty hard to fucking swallow. Especially when you have an emotional connection to somebody like that. I can sound a little cold when I talk about this shit, but for me, I just know what it is and what it isn't. And I like, you know, it is a grind to stay sober, dude. It is a fucking grind. It gets easier, but it's a fucking grind, man. And I can't really hammer this home more than I already have on this episode. Dude, it comes for me all the motherfucking time. All the time.
With 6 years clean.
All the fucking time, dude. I walk into a liquor store daily to buy my fucking terrible chew for my fucking terrible habit. And I sit there, and what's on right in front of my fucking face? A bunch of bottles of vodka and whiskey and shit. And I see people walking in with beers, and the sun's out, and everyone's got their fucking tits out and fucking going to drink alcohol and all this shit. And here I am, and I got to come home to some fucking screaming fucking baby and fucking dogs bouncing. I got to put dogs down and shit. Like, don't you think I want to fucking run away from this shit? And then the devil gipper's in my fucking ear like, hey, buddy, we could do that. And I got to tell him to fuck off. Like, dude, it comes all the time. But
they can't keep making new alcohol either. That's fucked up. Yeah, like, dude, I want to try Crown Raspberry.
I've never even had a White Claw, dude. I love sparkling waters. I bet you I'd throw those fucking things down. But you get what I'm saying, right? Like, it comes, dude. It comes for me. It comes for everybody. And the difference is that I know the reality of that fucking decision. I go back to where I once was, and I look back at where, or I look to where I am now, and I know for a fucking fact, and this is through 6 years of self-discovery, that nothing has changed. Nothing. I know that I will be right back where the fuck I'm at. I won't be seeing my fucking kids. I won't be seeing anything. Ashley will leave me. Everything I have fucking worked so hard to fucking achieve will go down the shitter. And then I am no better than the person right underneath the fucking bridge. And that's how you stay in that loop, because you fucking give up everything that you work so fucking hard for, and you feel like you've lost it all. And I'll die on that fucking hill. And it's very fucking important that we don't fucking give in to those fucking impulses. You know what I mean? Because it's not a rarity. This isn't a you exclusive thing if your addiction comes talking to you. It's not. And I really want to just really hammer that fucking home, man, because it comes for me. It comes for Henry. It comes for my fucking sponsor who's been sober for 5 trillion fucking years. It comes for everyone. And if you say it doesn't come for you, like my cousin Matthew said to me one time, I almost slapped him in the fucking face. I was like, shut the hell up. You're lying to me. Because I don't think about drinking anymore, dude. Well, hey, congratulations, dude. I don't believe you. So, you know, like it comes, man. And I'm sorry that I got a little hot and fucking heavy here, but don't make that fucking decision.
Life or death.
It's life or fucking death. It's life or death, man. Henry's talking about his buddy that he just tried to help who just fucking died last night. I just found out a guy that we skated with in fucking Fair Oaks is fucking dead. I see a friend from fucking high school right here by my house walking around looking like shit, pock marks all over his fucking face, looking terrible. This is the reality of the situation. So pick up the fucking phone, do what you got to do, and using is never a fucking option, ever. ever. Because that reality, whatever you're running from, is not fucking going away. I can't, if I picked up a fucking bottle, now that I'm sitting here on this 10-minute tangent, if I picked up a fucking bottle after putting Carlos down, Carlos is not coming back. All right. Mm-hmm. If I fucking did it for anything, that any tragedy that has happened to me in my years of sobriety, none of that is getting solved by me getting fucking loaded. Ever. It's not. It's not solving a fucking thing. So are we going to take it on the fucking chin like we have to, or are we going to go back to that old behavior and run the fuck away from it? And now I'm fucking pissed off and I don't want any more people fucking dying, dude. Like, can it stop? Like, fuck, dude.
Well, unfortunately, it won't stop, but we can do our best to slow it down as much as we can. One other thing on the whole, you know, choice or not, I remembered that I like to make this distinction when I talk to people about the first step, or they ask about the first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol or our addiction, if you're in NA, that our lives have become unmanageable. And I like when it says we're powerless over our addiction. But the point that I like to distinguish is, I'm powerless once I put something in me. Then the Devil Gipper has taken the controls. He's the little alien from Men in Black in my head saying, yeah, we're going to fucking take over the world. Get in your car and drive to the nearest casino and take out $1,000 and fucking rah.
We're rich, son.
Once I put it in me, I have no more power over it. It has the power, all the power over me. But before that, when I'm clear of mind and I'm clean, I have a choice. So we get to choose daily not to use. Once we use, we start losing choices. We lose the power. We have the power when we're clean. But when we start to use again, the power is gone. And the drugs or the alcohol have the fucking power. They have the controls. And that's when we lose control. So it is a choice when you are clean and you decide to get high or drunk.
Hell yeah, dude.
And then you lose the ability to make the proper decisions, and you lose the choice because you've reignited that sensation of craving and you're fucking off to the races. We have a choice until we put one in us.
Dude, that's a great fucking point, bro. I actually haven't heard that said in that fashion, but that's a great fucking point, dude. That really is. Yeah, you have control up until you lose that control.
Until you don't.
And it all ends once you give in to what the Devil Gipper's telling you, right? It's really that simple. And you gotta find a way to just realize that that's just the Devil Gipper doing the Devil Gipper things, dude. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to come, bro. You can count on him coming for you, just like you can count on the fucking sun rising, as far as I'm concerned. And that's been my experience in recovery, right? I'm not saying that every single time the Devil Gipper comes for me, it's fucking, you know, it's a crisis. 99.999% of the time, I don't even give a shit. It's just a thought. I just let it fly by. But mm-hmm. but if you catch you in a precarious situation, for people who are not working a program or kind of out of the loop, that's how people leave. And that, but I love that quote, man. I love that. That's great, dude. That's a great example of how quick it goes, because boom, there you go. Fucking, we put gas in the tank, and who knows how far we're gonna run with that fucking full tank of gas, right?
Well, people hate that powerless word, right? People don't want to be powerless. So I say, like, I'm powerful until I put my drug of choice in me. And then I'm powerless over my addiction. But before that, before I make that wrong decision, I have the power. I lose the power when I give it back to the drugs or alcohol.
Bro, I fucking love that, dude. That's fucking straight flames, dude. Straight flames, man. I'm going to keep that with me. Fantastic, dude.
Drop that dick on people in fucking meetings and shit.
That's great, dude. Well, I was gonna get into now that we're already an hour in, man. We're rolling. Mm-hmm. We can push some other things to the side. There was one thing I did want to hit on that does kind of coincide with this conversation. You know, mm-hmm. some people who aren't suicidal could never understand what that's like. I would never do that, or yada yada. I don't understand why someone would think that. Well, if you are in active addiction and you are actively choosing to use, you are actively attempting suicide every single day of your life in some form or fashion of it. So you may not be like Hannah was, or you may not be like me who was staring at a loaded gun, but you are taking that same risk because you are giving up on yourself by betting against yourself and letting the substance take control. And I know I could have said that more eloquently, but I hope the point got across because I made a great correlation and it sounded good in my head. And now when I just said it out loud, it sounded like ass. But you get what the fuck I'm saying.
It came across. Okay. I mean, I think that your analogy earlier of Russian roulette was perfect too, because you really are these days, especially. You never know. And I love that. I agree, man. If you're like, I want to live, if you say you want to live, but you're buying opiates or, mm-hmm. you know, press pills off the streets, you might not.
Yep.
But a lot of people that are doing that might not want to live. So maybe stop doing that, go to treatment and get clean, because it's worth it. It's pretty freaking rad.
It is better. It is better.
I want to switch up the mood, end on a high note just for a moment. We have had something on in these notes for like 6 fucking months.
Dude, I have no
idea
what this is.
Dying with anticipation.
What is it?
Under Grinds Gears, you have cheating on Go Fish.
Okay, dude. Well,
wait, did we talk about this?
We did not. We did not. And my wife is going to be
this fucking thing. Can you please tell me?
Okay.
Who was cheating on Go Fish?
All right, dude. Well, time for me to never get laid again. All right. So here we are. All right. Here is, I'm sitting around. I forget where Addison got it, but she got a pack of cards with all the old card games, you know, like Old Maid and fucking Go Fish and, you know, things like that. So we're having a family game night and we're sitting around and we're playing Go Fish. And, dude, Addison is fucking 4 years old and is trying to figure out how to play this fucking game, right? And Ashley's like, she's obviously she's tipping her cards, right? Because she doesn't understand the concept. So I'm looking away like a good human being that I am. And all of a sudden, Ash looks over at her and goes, okay, yeah, just ask for this. And she asks me for something, and I tell her no. And then all of a sudden, Ashley looks over and goes, do you have any fours? Damn well knowing, because she's been staring at her fucking hand, that Addison has fours, dude. And I literally look at her, and I'm like, are you fucking cheating on Go Fish to beat our 4-year-old daughter? I was like, dude, what the fuck is going on, dude?
The kids got to learn. Calm down over there, participation trophy Cree.
No, dude. I mean, come on. She never played the fucking game. We're having to cheat on Go Fish with fucking 4-year-old.
You know, that's a moral quandary, because yeah, what do you do? Do you just say a card you know they don't have? That doesn't make much sense either.
You know what, man? I can't do it. She didn't know how
to
hold.
Have to put the question in the poll here.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm not for taking fucking, you know, all the 4-year-old's fucking cards because she doesn't even know how to play a card game. I think it was her first card game ever. A little background story. Ashley's family's real big into games, right? They play all these complex games. So I don't even think she could have helped herself in this scenario, but just know that I judged the shit out of her and I roasted her to oblivion, dude. I was calling her a cheater, and I was like, cheater, liar. I was getting after it, dude. So yes, just know that if you're playing cards with my wife, you better have those motherfuckers tucked, because she's going to be peeking for them, dude. She's coming for you, dude.
He's going to teach Addison how to play blackjack, and Addison's going to hit a 20, have a 20. She's going to be like, yeah, hit that for sure. Hit that.
Straight up, dude. She knows, dude. She's counting the cards. She's got it all figured out, dude. All right, man. Well, let me get to my Creerens quote of the week. This one is a fantastic one that actually is really great. I've shared it with you in the past, Henry. Perfect for this episode. Back to my main man, St. Augustine of Hippo. Starts like
it's
this.
New material.
Hey, I'm not going to have St. Augustine after this. I was going
to
say.
Hold on. Actually, I have a bone to pick with you. I'm going to say this for all of our listeners, because maybe I'm not the only one. Are you fucking totally positive it's not St. Augustine?
It can be Augustine or Augustine, however you want to pronounce it.
Augustine.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's go with the version where you're wrong.
Oh, okay. Word, dude. Anyways, let me get to my fucking quote.
Fuck you. That's why. Ah. The devil gipper.
Yeah, because you can't be right. So here we are. It goes perfectly for this grieving episode. Love begins with a smile, grows with a kiss, and ends with a teardrop. There you go. St. Augustine, because there's always one person on the other side, right? You think of lovers who've been together forever. One person always dies first. And, you know, it was the same thing. I could say the same thing for Carlos. He made me smile when he was a little puppy. I used to kiss him right on his little tiny fucking head. And that relationship ended with me holding him crying my fucking eyes out. So love, the greatest emotion that everybody deserves, but one that brings the most fucking pain. It's a very good quote. It's a very good quote.
It is better to live and have love than to never loved at all.
Ooh.
Wait, it is better to love and to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all.
I think that's it. I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
The Henrin quote. Okay. And say one more thing. I have one more thing. I'm so sorry. This has been a longer episode. But the other day, we have a lot of homeless people out here in California. So there's wandering drug addicts everywhere. I was at this stoplight, and I saw these guys on the middle aisle with a little tub, and they were handing out.
Making more money than you did today.
No.
Dude. People flying signs make dough. Do you know that?
Oh, I know. I do know that.
$1,000 in a day.
These fucking guys weren't doing that. So what I'm saying is these guys were walking around, and I noticed that they were handing out flyers. So I picked up this flyer from them. I rolled down the window, and the guy's like, "There's my friend," and it's a bunch of guys giving out flyers for free treatment for drug addicts out here in California. And
Hell yeah. And
they said it's run through a church. It's called Missionaries to the Drug Addicts, restoring the drug addicts and their families in the inner cities of America. It's a Christian live-in, no-charge homes for men and women with drug-related problems, a place where God can change lives. Now, if you have a problem with God or anything like that, that's for you to chew on. But if you are in California in Sacramento County, you can go here free of charge. So reach out to this number. The number is 916-271-9863. One more time. That's 916-271-9863. Missionaries to the Drug Addicts. Guys were doing the Lord's work, and I said I would shout them out on the pod. So hopefully if you're struggling and you can't afford treatment, maybe these guys can help you.
Well, if they have a website, we'll put it in the show notes, huh?
Yeah. Hey, I thought it was really cool, man. I thought it was really cool. Instead of asking for money, they were handing out hope. So this is a good way to end this.
Hope dealers, brother.
I'm out here. Hope dealers, brother.
I'm a dopeless hope fiend, brother.
My addiction's out there in the parking lot doing push-ups.
I slang and hip, my guy.
Oh, the fucking stereotypical guy in the back. We all know him.
Us just laughing at people improving their lives and not dying.
Huge fucking assholes over here contradicting everything we just talked about. What do we want to have them follow this weekend?
Their fucking dreams, brother.
Okay. Here, I'll go with it. How about you follow us on Instagram?
Yeah.
Rude Dude Pod. Give us a follow on Instagram this week. You want to do us a favor. We would greatly appreciate it. And I just want to say it's nice to be back. Hen, once again, I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you for all the support with the loss from Carlos. I am here for you on your journey of grieving, as is everybody else who loves you. Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap, brother?
No, sir.
All right, man. Well,
I do. Yeah, one thing.
Okay.
How about this? I'll make a promise to our listeners. We will elevate the vibes next week.
That's a promise.
Sorry for two heavy ones in a row. You know, this is life. This shit really happened. There's nothing we can do about it. But we also like to bring joy and make people smile. So whatever we do next week, I have a guest in mind. I'll see if I can lock him in.
Yeah.
But the vibes will be lifted.
Yes. Well, it was a heavy episode. But you know what? It was real. And we've always claimed to be real. And it had to be talked about.
It is better to have loved and lost than never loved at all.
Yep, that's right, buddy. Hey, the Henrin quote is better than the Creewin quote. So we'll go with that, dude. I will finish it like I always do. I love you, Hen. Good to see your face, brother, and be gentle with yourself.
I love you too, Cam, and it is very nice to have my partner back. And remember, be yourself. Fuck what they think.
And later, dude.
What an MC with the music, I'm here, Eagle Eye. I'm gonna fuck beat them, boy, the lyrics.